Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson, and I am so excited for today's show. We are focusing on ag tech today, starting with the Western Growers Center for Innovation and Technology. I went to the center in Salinas for their open house on Wednesday and got to do these interviews in person. To start with, I'm talking with Walt DeFlock, Western Growers Vice President of Innovation. Here's our conversation. Walt, we are talking in person, which first off is amazing, and we are at your center in Salinas. Tell me a little bit about the center.
Sure. The center is the ground floor of the Taylor Building, which is in downtown Salinas, and we opened it in 2014, I believe, and it's been with us as a physical representation of the connection between ag tech and ag right here in the center of Salinas, which we think is very appropriate, and in the Taylor Building with Taylor Farms, which we think is also very appropriate.
And like you said, we are here in the middle of Salinas, and as our listeners can hear, there's a lot of activity going on around us. That's perfectly okay. Things are heading back to what we're more used to. And that is significant today for Western Growers with your tech center. You're having an open house.
We're having an open house to let everyone know that we're back and open for business. Obviously, the last year with COVID was a little tough and things slowed down. But this center serves as a hub for the ag community to meet, for the ag tech community to meet with the growers. And the fact that we're reopened for business should get the startups re-engaged and get the growers back here more often. And we think those connections are key to making this all happen correctly.
You came on board in this position fairly recently. Is that, that's correct?
Yes.
So there are a lot of people who probably have not met you yet in person. They have, I'm sure, seen you online, and I know that you write articles that they have read. So what does this mean to you to finally get to meet them?
You know, it's true. I feel like I know a lot of people online. We have these virtual friendships that are now going to get back to being IRL, as my kids say, in real life. And it's exciting for me. And you know, I did. I joined in October of 2020. So it was a funny interview period, right, for COVID interviews. I only met my boss, the CEO of Western Growers, one time in person during the entire process. And that was at Tarpey's restaurant here in Salinas, which seems appropriate. And he was the only person at Western Growers I'd actually met live until I took the position. And to those people that I'm now going to get a chance to meet in person, I would offer two parts of my background. Number one is a fifth-generation family farm in South Monterey County that does cattle, specialty crops, and wine grapes. And number two is a 30-year career in Silicon Valley at a few non-ag tech startups, including eBay, that did well, and some others that got acquired. The last few years have been at the Thrive Accelerator, getting startups connected with ag and growers, and really excited to be at Western Growers, pushing that same connection between all the innovators and all the growers, and just making it happen faster.
You know, I think that this is such a unique story that you have, where you grew up here and you grew up around all of this, and not only have you been involved in agriculture, but then to be so involved in technology and now to be able to merge the two together. Is that something that you always strived for, or did it just flow that way?
You know, it wasn't a strive for, but it certainly was a nice happenstance when it all came back together. I mean, I was up in Silicon Valley doing my thing, great wife, five kids, doing the Bay Area thing. And gradually, you know, my grower friends kept asking me about startups, and my startup friends in the Valley, Silicon Valley, actually started asking about ag. And so as those conversations started to increase in frequency, back to the Taylor Building, the first Forbes event happened, which the SVG Thrive team and Forbes put together, and obviously Bruce Taylor was integral with that. And so you could see the worlds colliding, and I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to get out of the Silicon Valley rat race for a little bit and come down to this one instead, and it's been a whole lot of fun making the transition. And so I drive a lot more south out of the Bay Area now than I used to, and It's a lot of fun to get growers and innovators connected, because there's a lot of startups and there's a lot of problems we need to solve for farmers. So we're trying to help.
So as I walked in here today into the center, the first thing I noticed is you've got several desks and people obviously working on projects at the desks. There's a conference center where several people were gathered in having some type of a meeting. I don't know what it was about, but what kind of things go on here at the tech center?
So a lot of events where we're trying to get the growers, the partners, and the startups connected. So when I was at Thrive, from the accelerator perspective, we would bring startups down here and talk to people like RDO and Pacific Ag and labor contractors, all the partners that can sell the innovation. Because one thing that's clear is, and I've been in enterprise, I've been in e-commerce, I've been in online advertising, there is no space where a personal relationship helps you more than farming. And a lot of these growers have these connections decades long, went to school together, kids go to school together now, they play, you know, softball games, soccer games together. And so what I tell every startup is, if you're not from around here, go find a friend who's from around here that can sell to that grower. It'll work out better for both of you.
And what a wonderful place to do this. As I said in our first interview together a couple of weeks ago, Salinas, a great place to bring people together for agriculture, especially because there are so many different types of crops. Before I came down to the center today, I was driving around, as I told you, just checking out the different crops. I saw strawberries, I saw onions, I saw all kinds of leafy greens that I can't even identify, especially not from the car as I'm driving. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, of course, artichokes. And as you mentioned, especially, I think, in California, we obviously deal with so many problems. Drought automatically comes to mind. But then also so many other things that all of agriculture is working against and working with. You know, we're talking climate change or carbon capture. And just there's so much going on these days. Bringing technologies and finding new ways to combat what we're going through or things to benefit agriculture, that all can happen here.
Exactly. That's it. I mean, on the plus side, California is a $50 billion agriculture economy all by itself, and there's a lot of ag tech behind that that enables that. On the downside, there are the challenges you mentioned, right? Since I was a boy, you know, labor, water, and food safety have been 1, 2, and 3. You can argue the order, but you can't really argue the top three. And so we're still facing that. You're right. Massive drought conditions. We need more water storage. We could use some desal along with it, right? Food safety, again, harvest season. This is prime season. I mean, you're here at a great time. There's a lot of work going on. It's busy. It's busy in Salinas. It's busy around Salinas and all up and down the valley. And so again, you've got all the food safety stuff that we do every year to keep the food safe and work, you know, to keep that food supply as safe as we can. And then the labor thing. I mean, again, the labor challenge is real. It's amazing. My colleague Dennis Donahue and I do the road show, as we call it. We drive down the 5 from Salinas all the way to Yuma. We come back the 101 side. We talk to 30 growers in a week, do it about every other month or so. And in spite of the water and food safety challenges, the number one topic that came up on our trip, labor. There's not enough of it. Crops are going unharvested. Everyone hates that. You plant it, you fertilize it, you water it, you grow it, you got nobody to harvest it at the end of that process. It's tough. So automation is the key, and it's been the key for decades, as we talked about last time, right? Triple the production from 50 years ago, and yet 70% of our labor force has disappeared. The family workers are gone because the small farms got sold, and the farm workers are an aging group now, and there's not as many of them. We've lost a lot of them in the last 20 years.
And this is not an issue that was caused by the pandemic. I think the pandemic maybe put a spotlight on labor issues a bit, but as long as I've been reporting in California, and it's really been a long time, I have been reporting on labor issues in the state and about food having to be left out in the field because there's not somebody to come and harvest it. It is a very serious problem that we go through all the time. Yeah. Automation, as you mentioned, can be extremely important in solving some of those problems. Again, bringing technology into agriculture. What other kinds of problems can technology help solve?
You know, it's interesting. So there's harvest, which our big automation initiative is focused on. There's things like thinning and weeding. So all the things around harvest that get it ready can now be automated. There's planting. There's things like plant tape that are out there. So we can plant automatically. More automated. We can thin. We can weed more automated. We can now harvest more automated. And then the two things that always come up around that are for the innovative solutions that really take hold in the marketplace, it's two things along with that. It's genetics, right? And it's farming practice, right? So the best thinning, the best harvest is done when things are weeded right and things are planted right. And now in terms of harvest, think about the 3D to 2D migration, right? We've now got a better presentation of the food for the harvester. That makes the harvest more effective. So when you can get genetics working with the automation, it's a multiplier effect. Similarly, when you can get farming practices to help. So are you getting all the weeds out of there so there's nothing in the way of that visioning system that needs to see the plant to get harvested? And again, the taller broccoli, right? We've genetically engineered broccoli to be taller. What a great innovation to make it easier for the harvest machine. And it's the same product to the consumer. So it's a win for the consumer, it's a win for the grower, and it's a win for the startup that can pick the high broccoli, right?
Absolutely. And we've mentioned being here in the Salinas Valley, but this is not only for this area. Obviously, the crops grown in my hometown area, Fresno County, Madera County, obviously it would help out. But then also other states and other, you know, other crops. I mean, things that even could help with major corn crops or soybean crops. All of that comes down to the technology and advancements that are currently being made. Are you seeing a broad interest here in the center, because it's not just people from the Salinas Valley coming in here or who can come in here to use it?
No, that's exactly right. And we work with growers. You know, again, our member base is all specialty crop growers, and it's everywhere, right? It's the 101 side of California. It's the 5 side of California that's down to Arizona. And so, no, we work with everybody, and our startups work with everybody. So we've got plenty of folks doing nuts and citrus over in the Central Valley on your side of the world, out of the center. Exactly right. Like I said, the center is a physical manifestation of that connection where things can happen. But our growers are all up and down the state. We just connected a couple of startups in the last week with folks at Harris Ranch, Wolf Farming over there, Stuart Wolf and that crew over there. So, I mean, there are connections getting made up and down the state. Imperial Valley as well. We've got some of the growers down there looking at stuff. As the growing season moves south and north, we then have opportunity to get ready for the next season. So our startups move with it, sometimes in reverse, to get ready for the next season. So, yes, all up and down the state.
Those are all of the questions that I had. That's everything that I had, but is there anything else that you wanted to talk about today?
You know, I would mention one other topic, and this is a topic we're pretty excited about. The one thing that's happening on the labor front that's worth noting is not only is there a need, there's a gap for labor, there's also a gap for ag tech labor. So Western Growers is working with the state of California and the University of California on a curriculum for the next gen ag worker. And we'll have more to talk about in a while. We're applying for grants. We're putting some stuff in process. But we would hope that in a couple of years, we would have a project launch that would leverage community colleges, both 2 and 4 year colleges in California, to train that next generation of ag worker, because it's a very different model for the job, right? It's part engineer, it's part biologist, it's part agronomist, and it's part problem solver. You've got to be at the site watching the robot do what it does and figure out what needs to get it fixed right now, because you can't wait to harvest some of this stuff. And so we're really interested in being part of the movement that gets these next generation of farm workers educated and in the fields and excited about ag. The growers know they need some of these kids to get trained this way. The kids hopefully are going to recognize it, and we're excited to be working with California on making it happen.
That sounds like something very exciting. It's in the works for that. For people who are listening who would like to get more information, possibly become members or come down to the center, what should they do?
You know, we have a Western Grower Center of Innovation and Technology page on the website at wga.com. Feel free to come by there. And on the AgTech, the education stuff specifically, there's an AgTech X Ed portion of that blog as well. So a lot of the center information is on the site. There's blog posts about all of it, and we'd welcome communication on it so we can hear from you. And if folks have input, we're welcome for it.
Thank you so much for your time today. I want to let you get back in there and meet everybody who came out to see you.
Thank you.
We have more from the Western Growers Center for Innovation and Technology in segment 3, but our news brief is up next. We'll be right back.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
The My Ag Life Daily News Report is brought to you in part by the California Walnut Board.
Here's your news brief for today. The Department of Agriculture's Economic Resource Service released the latest livestock, dairy, and poultry outlook. While a cyber attack disrupted cattle slaughter for 2 days in June, the Memorial Day week finished above 2020 levels, though well below 2019. USDA did raise cow slaughter in the second and third quarters of 2021, but fed cattle slaughter decreased in the second quarter. The milk production forecasts for 2021 and 2022 increased on higher expected milk cow numbers. Exports were relatively strong in April as cheese exports reached a record high, and butter exports were higher than any month since June 2014. Finally, the 2021 broiler export forecast increased on recent data and improved production expectations. The federal government's $4 billion plus investment in creating stronger, more resilient supply chains includes a focus on the farm and food sectors, Rod Bain reports.
Notable disruptions in our nation's supply chains, from the COVID-19 pandemic to cyber attacks, is behind Biden administration efforts to strengthen and make more resilient these essential avenues. That includes supply chains within the food and farm sector. And Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack observes,
I would say this challenge of the supply chain adds to a number of concerns that have arisen about our current food and ag system. This leads me to believe that what we really need is a transformational change to one that is economically, environmentally, and nutritionally more resilient and fairer and more open.
To that end, a recently announced $4 billion plus federal investment in ag and food supply chains will rely on a mix of grants, loans, and innovative funding opportunities to support efforts to build resilience and economic growth in areas such as
production resiliency, processing resiliency, distribution and aggregation resiliency, and markets and consumer benefits.
Secretary Vilsack offers examples of how each specific supply chain area might benefit from this investment.
In the food production area, we hope to make this system more resilient by continuing to build on our efforts at attracting beginning farmers, by providing significant transition assistance as those who wish to transition to a more value-added proposition are able to do so without necessarily being economically penalized, and assistance as well for those who work on our farm fields and in our manufacturing and processing facilities.
On the processing side,
we hope to be able to provide resources to improve existing small and mid-sized processing facilities, be able to cope and manage with the current challenges that they face as a result of COVID. But we also want to take a look at creating a pilot for the federal government to partner with state and local governments to see whether or not there is an opportunity to expand with new processing facilities and capacity in order to make our system more resilient.
Food hub expansion is part of the investment focus regarding the food distribution and aggregation aspect of supply chains,
particularly those that will operate in high poverty areas. We look to work with our food banks and those involved to develop cooperative agreements between food banks and producers so that we create additional market opportunities for small and mid-sized producers. And we hope to see an expansion of food banks in underserved areas.
And in the realm of markets and consumers,
in the market area, we hope to increase the availability of access to healthy foods with these resources, including incentives to support food that is generated and developed in a fair and healthy system.
Secretary Vilsack's involvement in fostering these investments includes his role as co-chair of the administration's newly established Supply Chain Disruptions Task Force, designed to use a whole-of-government approach to address short-term supply challenges. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Argentina appears on track toward reaching an agreement to reopen beef exports. The potential deal comes days ahead of that expiration date on the government's month-long suspension. Argentina paused beef exports to combat domestic inflation, which is estimated overall at about 50% this year. Still enacting the export ban, Argentinian beef packers began negotiating with the government to lift restrictions, fearing they could be extended. From Argentina to China, how much of the U.S. export sales are dependent on purchases by China? Gary Crawford looks into it.
It took a year of on-and-off negotiations to get the so-called Phase 1 trade agreement with China, and when it was signed back in January 2020, then-Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue told reporters,
I believe it will be a real bonanza for America's farmers, ranchers, and producers.
So how has it turned out? Well, first, let's look at overall U.S. agricultural exports to all nations. We have complete numbers now for the first 7 months of the fiscal year, October through April, and during that time,
agricultural exports were $107 billion. Compared to $84.7 billion the same time last year for an increase of 26%.
That's economist Bart Kinner. He tracks trade for the USDA, so we've racked up $107 billion worth of ag product export sales to all customers. The question for you, Bart, now is how much of that 107 is from purchases by China?
And the answer to that is $24.3 billion.
So China accounts for
23% of total agricultural exports.
China, then, by far the biggest single customer for U.S. ag products. And what's the biggest single product China is buying?
Soybeans.
Soybeans. Bart Kenter says China's soybean purchases are up 215% from a year ago at $13.5 billion.
So more than half of the exports to China are in soybeans.
Next on the list, corn. China has taken $2.3 billion worth of U.S. corn, up from almost nothing in 2020. But if you want to be specific and precise, corn exports to China are up from last year by
810,000%.
Okay, and China is buying more of just about every ag commodity. For example,
wheat products, more than 1,000% increase over this time last year.
And looking over at the livestock side of the ledger,
beef and veal up 840% over this time last year. Poultry products are up over 200%.
Just about the only U.S. product China is buying less of is pork.
Pork is down 30% as they recover from African swine fever.
But again, China continues to buy U.S. products, and as we heard, we are depending on China for about 23% of our export sales business. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says he is, of course, pleased with the purchases, but also realizes that
because of the complex nature of the Chinese-U.S. relationship, things can happen that might affect those purchases.
So Vilsack says it's in our best interest
to continue to look for other market opportunities.
Africa, Asia, the EU, UK, all very promising. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
It seems the days of broccoli bashing are over. In a recent survey, broccoli secured the number one spot yet again as America's favorite vegetable, followed by carrots and corn. Green Giant's annual favorite veggie survey polled more than 5,000 Americans. Although broccoli remains America's favorite, the popularity of corn substantially increased over the past year. The survey found 100% of consumers surveyed who picked broccoli as their favorite vegetable noted the taste as a top factor in making that selection. However, from 2019 to 2021, the number of states selecting carrots as the favorite vegetable has increased 500%. Those selecting broccoli have decreased 23%. Compared to survey data from 2020, 7 times more states selected corn as a favorite in 2021. And while broccoli is still America's favorite vegetable, according to that general population survey, corn is the runaway favorite vegetable among Americans ages 55 to 72. Tomatoes and cucumbers were noticeable favorites in 2020 that did not make the favorites list in 2021. That's your news brief for today. We'll be right back.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Welcome back. We go back out to the Western Growers Center for Innovation and Technology in Salinas, where I caught up with the director, Dennis Donahue. All right, Dennis, you were introduced to me as the godfather of ag tech, and I know you have another title as past mayor. Tell me about these titles and what they mean to you.
Well, that's the first time I'd heard that. I'd heard that title, but I am proud to look back at my time in office as the mayor, which also in my first year in office, I also happened to be taking my turn as the chair of the Central California Growers Shipper Association. So those were two really good platforms to, and at the time, and I was still working in ag, my thought was from an economic development strategy that we ought to take the freshest valley on the planet and take advantage of our immediate contiguity with the most innovative valley on the planet, the Silicon Valley, and you know, how could we create opportunity in terms of whether it was business development, job creation, wealth creation opportunities, because Salinas is a relatively young city, and you know, we had some challenges, and you know, you're looking to grow your revenue base and create opportunities for your community. So that was my thinking at the time when I took office, and how to, you know, and I had started out in the Silicon Valley with my business career, but you know, I always like to tell people at the end of the day, my favorite title was salesman married to a farmer's daughter, and we decided to move back home after, you know, a couple of years in the Silicon Valley. But it always kind of stayed with me, and I always thought it'd be kind of interesting to see if you can bring those two worlds together.
Yeah. And remind me, what year was it that you were elected mayor?
I took office December 2006, so served for six years.
So, and during that time, there was a lot of growth in this area, and now we are sitting here now, 2021, at the Western Growers Center for Innovation and Technology. Did I get that correct?
You got it right. You know, the key to that growth was, I had an idea and a thought, but you know, when you're a mayor, you do have a platform, and fortunately, and you know, today we're sitting, we're sitting in the courtyard of the, you know, Taylor Farms headquarters, and you know, Bruce was and you know, Taylor Farms, obviously a very innovative company, but you know, Bruce, as he was moving up the leadership chain for his turn as chair of Western Growers, obviously, you know, there's a platform there, there's experience there, there's a history of innovation there. And then I happened to bring in John Hartnett, who was from the Irish Leadership Technology Group. So there was a history of organizing tech assets, companies, people, resources, and so I introduced John to Bruce, and you know, so what really happened, besides, rather than here's three different people with an idea, what I think really made it powerful and led to acceleration was a combination of platform, resources, experience, intersecting on a vision. And, you know, Western Growers, you know, was looking for ways to, you know, the industry does cooperate routinely on things like food safety, technical issues, regulatory matters. And, you know, and I think to Bruce's credit, you know, from a leadership standpoint, I think he recognized that, you know, innovation and technology could be tools to meet the challenges that agriculture faces, particularly in California. Fortunately, the board and Tom Nasith and, you know, folks embraced that. So there were a lot of moving parts. And, you know, Western Growers is a fabulous platform from my vantage point, and having been in the industry, I was a member. You know, and I'm always very clear, you know, when I say the freshest valley on the planet, you know, the Central Coast, you know, we're the veg folks and strawberries. When you go over into the Central Valley, which is a great valley and a big valley, you know, that's the fruit and nut crowd, and then you go to the Midwest. So I was always very precise in my language, but Bruce representing Western Growers and Tom, and you know, when everybody looked at that, you know, said, hey, this is a really powerful network to leverage. And when you think about, you know, creating opportunities for technology, scaling, innovation, and investment. So I think that was the thinking at the time. And you know, the center ended up being the physical manifestation of that thought process. And you know, at the end of the day, You know, we may be officed in Salinas, but, you know, as you heard during the little reception we're having here, we move around the state. We're for the entire network. And very, very frankly, AgTech has, you know, almost from day one been global in nature. I think we've done a really good job of participating in that connectivity, you know, creating access, you know, becoming a land, hopefully a landing spot for folks who want access to specialty crop world. But likewise, you know, hopefully creating opportunities and introductions for the residents we work with. So, you know, it's turned out to be a terrific platform, and we'd like to think on a global basis.
And from what I understand, we heard from Walt in the previous interview, and we were talking about the people who are involved in this and the different kinds of projects, and there's such diversity in there and the problems that they're trying to fix with the projects. Tell me a little bit about that, if you can.
Well, you know, ag tech is a catch-all phrase for a lot of buckets. You know, is it food safety? You know, is it automation? Is it data? Is it, you know, is it... there's a lot of activity, for instance, around bee tech and pollination, the importance of soil health. A lot of people talk about drones. Drones were never the product. They were the tool, and that leads to analytics and new services. You know, we've got a company we're awfully proud of in the center, Concentric Power. You know, a local boy makes good, a Salinas High grad who, I'm trying to recall his... his resume, but I think MIT's in there somewhere, and involved in the renewable energy, the microgrid game. So it's a big bucket, and so you're right. It represents AgTech represents a response to some strategic and chronic issues. You know, food safety, the labor issue, and you know, water. You know, when we got started, the drought was the big deal. But, you know, water, you know, supply is going to be fundamentally a matter of policy and infrastructure. But quality is, you know, technology. But certainly software, in terms of kind of keeping score when you've got to manage things closely. So water ended up really kind of being that. The most visible symbol of we're going to have to do more with less. It becomes the setup for big data and all the tools of precision ag. So all those things kind of play out, through the center, in terms of those interests. The other thing we've just gotten started on is kind of our. It's a combination of social good and smart and necessary to do. You know, we've got a new program with that we're going to be working for the coming year with Secretary of Ag Karen Ross, working with four different community colleges to begin to talk about the need for a more tech-savvy worker, a new kind of worker, as it were, where you really begin to blend ag and tech together, that we've got to be intentional to how we go about trying to create that type of work. And there's a really interesting phenomena going on. You've got a lot of urban students in universities who are really interested in agriculture and food. And then you've got a lot of, young people, who have been, typically, let's say, for more rural communities or farming communities, and they get involved in technology. And, now we're in kind of a competition. The more technically adept these days you are, you're sought after.
Yeah.
So that kind of that old saying, how do you keep them down on the farm, becomes a little more challenging.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things going on in this space. But what I find exciting, and this hasn't changed in the several years I've been involved in it, that idea of innovation, ag tech, what's new, what's next. It's changing and evolving. And I think that's pretty exciting. There's nothing static about it. It's pretty dynamic. And I look back on the last year, and I kind of, if you can say you're working on interesting projects with great people, and addressing real challenges, that's gives life a little purpose.
Well, and I was just thinking, too, that I wish this was a video interview, because your face lights up when you talk about this, and you can, especially when you mentioned the specific people and how they're involved, you can just see that you are completely invested in this.
Well, you know, I've spent a long time doing it, but you know, I was joking with somebody the other day. You know, we were just kind of talking about ag, and I said, well, God forbid we had to get real jobs. Instead, we got a way of life, and I look at the people I've worked with for some 30 years. I look at the Western Growers Board members, you know, because these are multi-generational family farms. Many of them who are vested in their family, their community, committed to, you know, really providing great products. I'm a big fan of the George Washington Carver saying, the challenge is to do the common thing uncommonly well. And the people I get it was a privilege to be the mayor, and to me it's really a great opportunity to, try and provide some service and opportunities to, you know, folks I've worked with for some 30 years in the industry. And so it is a way of life. It's a mission. It's necessary. And like I said, you know, this has been a really tough last 15 months, but the opportunity to continue to work on hopefully real solutions for some of the challenges the industry face, it still makes it pretty easy to get up every day.
All right, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Good. Thanks for.
Thank you again to the Western Growers Center for Innovation and Technology for having me out to their open house. We continue the Tech Talk with Taylor right after this.
Agromiora Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromiora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Root Pack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromiora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Root Pack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today.
Hi, welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Today is Tech Thursday, a bi-weekly segment where we cover technological advances in ag. Our guest today is Eric Pfluger with Premier Tech Systems and Automation, and we'll be discussing a next generation robot for sorting almond kernels using artificial intelligence. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you, Taylor. Appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, great to have you here today. So Eric, you've collaborated with Manteca-based almond grower and processor Travail and Phippen Incorporated to develop this next generation of robotic almond sorters. You know, tell me how and why was this technology developed, Eric?
Well, in the beginning, we had really wanted to reduce labor costs. And the technology itself was developed years ago for seed corn in Iowa. And the problem in Iowa becomes they do not have the resources we have for labor, so they have to bus it in. The corn harvest is only about 5 weeks. And so they'll bus in thousands of people for 5 weeks. It really disrupts the small little farm communities. So they were trying to address that issue. That's when I saw the technology and said, hey, could we use that on an almond? And that's where we started.
Through developing this technology, testing it out, have you seen that it does have a pretty large impact on some of these labor issues?
Yeah, we, in some of the places we've reduced their labor quite a bit. And first talking with the guys at Travail and Phippen, they told us, you know, hey, we count quarters of a penny. If something can save me a quarter of a penny, I'm all in. It makes some money. And we've heard roughly estimates of up to a nickel a pound we can save people, depending on how much labor they're using now. So a nickel a pound times 30, 40, 50 million pounds a year, that's quite a savings in labor.
Eric, I'm curious, what can these robotic sorters, you know, truly do to improve the handling of tree nuts?
One of the things that the new system is going to be very good at is we will actually classify each individual kernel that, or piece or form material, whatever, that goes through the system. We look at each individual piece, we classify it, we give it the name, and we sort it that way. So when we sort these, any other kind of sorter, it all goes into one bin, and now you've got a product you need to deal with later. This system will not do that. We will have four separate bins for four separate products. One will be complete trash, one will be maybe a human consumption food for milk products or whatever, and then another one would be for maybe animal grade consumption or animal feed. So sorting it by the defects will really allow them to save time later in the year. They don't have the processing time they used to. With the yields that we're getting now and the amount of almonds being produced in California, they don't have 3 months at the end of the year to rerun things.
Eric, what areas of improvement were considered when designing these new sorters?
This sorter from the first sorter, obviously, I don't know if you've seen them, but it's quite a bit different. What we really wanted to do was, one, like I just said, be able to sort the product out, be able to give them a finished product that's clean, but on the reject side, we wanted them to be able to not have to run them at the end of the season. Also, we wanted it to be a plug-and-play system. The other system was kind of a long process to install. The robots were much larger. We had to have certain concrete rules to mount them. They're very big. We wanted this to be a plug-and-play system where it literally comes off the truck, you put it in line, and it starts up and runs. And we think we've done that.
Since you've made it easier in that regard, would, you know, let's say maintenance on the sorters in general be made easier with these newer sorters as well?
Yeah, there really is not much maintenance. You'd probably have maintenance on the robots once a year where you would have a tech come in and look at the robots. The rest of it's just a belt conveyor, the imaging system. There's really no maintenance there. The suction cups, that where we actually pick the product up, you'll probably have to replace those once or twice a week at the most. And they're, you know, pennies on the dollar.
Eric, what challenges did you encounter when prototyping the new robotic sorters, and how were those challenges overcome?
The new robotic sorters was a much easier challenge than the previous ones. The previous ones where we had to write all the codes, we had to figure out how to get it to talk back and forth between all the different technologies that we're using. Once we've cracked all that, it was a lot easier. But still getting the system to see the defects and get the timing down between when the robot can pick it, where it's at on the belt, things like that have always been the challenge. But for this one, there really wasn't anything like that, again, because we addressed those in the first edition.
Eric, do these robotic sorters have applications in other tree nuts besides almonds?
Yeah, we're doing testing with pistachios, primarily in shell for now, just because we haven't been asked about it for the raw kernels. And we actually have a system in and running on pecans right now in Georgia. So that was a different product for me. I've been dealing with almonds in California for close to 30 years. And that was the first opportunity with pecans. And they have they're a very oily product. So they're a challenge to deal with.
Definitely.
But the sorting aspect is fine. It's the same idea. We sort it the same way. So there's no problems there.
Yeah, I want to delve a little bit more before we end here into that sorting. You know, it sorts using this artificial intelligence and it kind of learns as it goes, as far as I understand here. Can you tell me a little bit about how that works?
Yeah, it's what they tried to do when they developed artificial intelligence is really get computers to think like the human brain. And they've basically done it. It's what happens when we train it. We give it an image and we say, this is an almond or this is a rock or this is a chip. And then it runs it through its course. It runs it through all the algorithms. They're called, when it comes out the other side, it says, okay, this is an almond. If we agree with it, we say, yes, that's an almond. If we disagree with it, we say no. It takes itself back into the system and it figures out another way to find out what it is. So it figures it out. We don't tell it that, no, that's this, once we've already trained it. So that's how it learns. the more you use it, the more images it takes, the better it gets. So if the system sorts quite well when you first start, in a year or two, the whole thing's going to be amazing. And what's great with the AI, it's one database. So once we get a few users out there, that database gets larger and larger and larger. The minute we plug the system in, it's as if you've got 2, 3, 4 years of knowledge behind you as far as the system goes. So having access to that is going to be much easier than trying to train the old system with the hyperspectral imaging and all the colors, and that's quite difficult.
I see. So from what I understand, the more people that use it, kind of the better it gets over time, and then it kind of just exponentially grows on itself there.
Correct.
That's really interesting. I'm curious, let's say from, you know, how much more efficient can it actually get as it continues to learn? Is there like a cap, would you say, with the processing lines, or how does that work there?
I don't think people that develop the AI systems even know how far along this can go. It's an incredibly smart system. And again, the more you use it, we've all used Google and we've all used Facebook, and that's all based on AI. I mean, you can be in the kitchen talking with your wife, your girlfriend, or whoever, and comment, "Hey, I really like the new Ford Mustang." And then you go in the other room and you look on Facebook and there's an ad for the new Ford Mustang. That's AI. And it's, they've just taken it to another level. So if we can get that good with it, we'll be pretty happy.
Eric, my last question for you here, you know, how can processors acquire the sorting technology for use in their own operations?
Actually, just contact me. I'm the sales manager for Premier Tech Systems and Automation for the entire United States for all nuts.
All right. Perfect. Thank you, Eric.
That's our show for today. I'm spending the day today at the Western Ag Processors Association annual meeting. You can watch my social media feeds for pictures and updates throughout the day, and we will have interviews on tomorrow's program. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson from the JCS Marketing Team. Thanks for listening.